I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Mr. Cohen has acted like he is above the law. He has considered himself and openly referred to himself as Mr. Trump's fixer. He has played by a different set of rules, or should we say no rules at all?
He could be indicted for bank fraud, wire fraud, campaign finance violations.
Says who?
He only has 3 clients. Apparently, he works for free.
And your question is?
I said last Friday and this weekend that Michael Cohen was radioactive.
Hello, and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about the man on a mission to rehabilitate the phrase mission accomplished, Donald Trump. I'm Jacob Weisberg, and I've been thinking about Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's Mr. Fix-It, his enforcer, his make-it-go-away man, chief information burial officer of the Delaware-based Essential Consultants, LLC, lifelong friend to the medium-time hoodlum Felix Sater, former co-owner of a Brooklyn catering hall favored by the Russian mafia, partner in a sketchy New York City taxicab medallion business with Simon Garber and Evgeny Friedman, the new Roy Cohn for a pro-Russian Joe McCarthy. Where, I've been asking myself, do we know this character from? Cohen's not a Jewish gangster type necessarily. He's more like a hanger-on and friend to gangsters and thugs, many of whom happen to be Jewish or Russian or both. One place you might run into that type is in a book called Tough Jews that my friend, the writer Rich Cohn, published 20 years ago. And sorry, today's show has more Cohns than a Baskin-Robbins. Tough Jews is about Jewish gangsters like Meyer Lansky, Bugsy Siegel, and Louis Lepke. But even more, it's about the Jewish fascination with our stereotype-defying mobster brethren, the Kosher Nostra. Michael Cohen is a wannabe tough Jew. Of course, Jewish gangsters were a phenomenon of the first-generation immigrants. They were mostly gone by the 1950s. But I wonder what the writer Rich Cohn would have to say about Michael Cohn, who 30 years ago in Brighton Beach, New York, met Felix Sater, a.k.a. Sheferovsky, the Kremlin-connected goon and Trump business partner. Michael Cohn's connections among the new gangsters from Russia don't prove anything about Trump and election collusion, necessarily. But they say a lot about the kind of people Donald Trump is happy to do business with. Coming up on the show, I'll speak to someone who's even less impressed by Michael Cohen than I am. He's Bloomberg columnist and Trump watcher Tim O'Brien. But first, what about Michael Cohen's trip to Prague? After the Steele dossier was published, Cohen categorically denied ever going there. But based on a new report from McClatchy News, there's now some serious doubt.
Okay, go ahead and state your name for the record.
Michael Cohen.
Okay, now as you know, I'm an assistant district attorney from the Southern District of New York.
I got nothing to hide.
Okay, I understand that. We basically wanted to talk to you because we've acquired some information that contradicts something you have said, so I just want to ask you again some questions you've previously already answered.
Yeah, I know how you acquired it. Okay, you came to 3 places, and I don't appreciate it, and I don't need it in my life, but I got nothing to hide, so go ahead.
So in the past, you have denied your visit to Prague.
Never been to Prague.
Right. So we have conflicting evidence now that indicates you have been to Prague.
I've never been to Prague, so nothing to hide.
Okay, well, this would indicate otherwise.
What's this? Yeah, okay. So what? Says I went to Prague. I went to Prague?
That's Prague.
What? Says who?
I mean, that's the word. It's Prague.
P-R-A-G-U-E. Prague. Prague at best. That's not Prague.
That is Prague. That's how Prague is spelled.
Are you going to put a U in Prague? Maybe you were in Prague.
No, I wasn't in Prague. You were in Prague.
Sounds like you just confessed to me.
But you just confessed. This isn't about me.
So that's news to me that's what you were asking about.
So you went in 2016 then?
Yeah, that's right.
And according to this information we've received, you met with high-level officials at the Kremlin.
Absolutely false. Absolutely false.
So you didn't meet
the Kremlin.
You didn't meet with officials from the
Kremlin.
No. Okay, well, according to this, you did.
Yeah, this is right. Yeah, I sat down with some guys from the Kremlin and met with them about a couple of things.
How do you say that word?
K-R-E-M-L-I-N, Kremlin.
Yeah, it's no, that's the Kremlin. That's what we're talking about. So you did.
Says who?
It says everyone. That's how the word's pronounced.
What? Okay, I was in Prague talking to some high-level guys from the Kremlin, okay? That's not a secret. I've never lied about that. I never told anybody otherwise. You got people on the fake news saying, Michael Cohen was in Prague talking to the Kremlin. That's a lie.
It's not a lie. You've just confirmed all of it. This was all laid out in Michael Steele's dossier.
That's not real.
You just confirmed the information from it.
What are you talking about?
Your 2016 meeting in Prague,
yes,
with members of the Kremlin is in the dossier. Look.
What?
That's the dossier.
This is the desire.
Oh, it's the dossier.
This is a desire. Look at that. We say the word you just said.
Dossier.
That ends with an A.
No, it...
This is... Look at the last three letters of this. I-E-R. How you say that? A?
Well, in this case, it is A.
Are we in America right now?
Yeah, we're in America.
How do you say I-E-R as an A?
It's a French word.
What are you, Obama?
No, I'm not Obama. Look.
Desire. Okay? So now, I know a lot of the things in this desire are true, actually. This desire is actually pretty thorough.
Yeah, in fact.
And the intelligence is pretty right on.
I mean, this would indicate that this is a strong indication that there was collusion, and it looks like you were the person doing it.
No, hashtag no collusion.
Okay.
Hashtag no collusion. We did a lot of collusion.
Jesus Christ.
That sketch was improvised by Steve Waltein and Asher Perlman of The Opposition with Jordan Klepper on Comedy Central.
All right, can I go now?
Yeah, you can go for now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Feels good to be done with this. Bullshit.
This episode is made possible by PwC. It's getting hot out here. Moving the mercury can help move your business. PwC helps turn sustainability theory into real-world action. Reduce your carbon footprint while increasing transparency in net zero commitments. Start with reporting to identify your climate risks and reinvent your business. Create a more sustainable business and a stronger planet. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Joining me on the line is Timothy O'Brien. He's the executive editor of Bloomberg Gadfly and Bloomberg View, which is the opinion section of Bloomberg. He's a regular on the show, though it's been a while, Tim. Welcome back.
It's nice to be loved again, Jacob.
Well, you've been loved the whole time. We think of you as as one of the key Trumpologists, of course, because of your excellent book about Donald Trump and your unique experience being sued by Donald Trump. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. What I want to talk about today is Michael Cohen. And you did, I think, your most recent column for Bloomberg earlier this week was kind of a sober up piece about Michael Cohen that was headlined, "Cohen Isn't the Biggest Catch from Trump World." And you sort of said, you know, hold your horses. This could be a big deal, of course. But Cohen isn't necessarily the person who knows where all the Trump bodies are buried. And he isn't necessarily the person who was running Trump's real estate business. So,
right. He wasn't running anything at the Trump Organization. You know, he was bringing Trump deals. Michael Cohen is the successor of a long line of lawyers who have been in Trump's employ, modeled after Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn, of course, was the sort of dark force of Manhattan political and legal life from the 1950s until his death in the 1980s. And I think he was sort of Trump's ambassador to how to play tough in Manhattan real estate and Manhattan politics, and he taught Trump how to weaponize the legal system. Trump has always had someone in his organization who really doesn't practice law. He sometimes she, but almost, I think, invariably he, is there to frighten enemies or critics or potential business partners or existing partners with the notion that if you don't do what Trump wants, there will be legal pain to follow. And that's who Michael Cohen is. He's only been at the Trump Organization for a little over a decade. There's other people in the Trump Organization who have been there for much, much longer and actually sort of ran the architecture of the place in consultation, of course, with Trump. I think that's relevant because I think the way the media has covered the search warrant executed on Cohen's residences and offices and the fact that he's got one of the top public law enforcement offices in the country, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, looking at him in conjunction with the FBI, means that a door has been blown open into Trump that is so profound and threatening that this then means the end of his presidency could be near. And I just think that's an overstatement. I think that there's no question that Cohen's business dealings, he's done business with career criminals in conjunction with the president, most notably the Trump Tower proposal for a project in Moscow, a peace plan that was aimed to be delivered to Michael Flynn for the Ukraine. That was also a Michael Cohen initiative, et cetera, et cetera. These things are all totally threatening to the president. But Michael Cohen was not the keeper of secrets at the Trump Organization. Two other people were.
Well, so,
and that's what I wrote about.
Right. So let me just press you a little bit on that because, you know, yes, maybe he wasn't at the center of all the business deals, but the way he's portrayed himself and the way other people have portrayed him as this sort of Ray Donovan character or Tom Hagen from The Godfather, you know, the fixer, the lawyer, that person does know where a lot of bodies are buried. And he might not be the person who made the deal, but boy, do you want to know what that guy knows. And if the lawyer-client confidentiality is breached because of the way Cohen's conducted himself and the suggestion that he has participated in the commission of crimes, then at that point, don't you have an open window into all the stuff that we're most interested in knowing about? Not collusion with Russia during the election necessarily, but infinite running room going backwards into what the Trump Organization was doing.
No,
that
you
was
don't
bad.
Have infinite running room going backwards because Michael Cohen did not touch that much stuff. Michael Cohen, again, he brought deals to Trump to consider.
Uh-huh.
And if Trump had a problem he needed to be solved, he would send Michael Cohen out to do it, i.e., there's a porn star who's alleging that I had a sexual encounter with her. Did the president instruct Michael Cohen to pay her to solve that problem? We don't know. That's going to be investigated. That's going to be problematic for the president. But actions like those aren't the same as structuring real estate deals with Russian investors or things of that ilk that others, I think, in his organization have more knowledge of. I'm not saying that Cohen doesn't have some knowledge of super damaging things. What I'm saying is Cohen has been created over the last week and in the last 2 weeks as the keeper of the keys.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that's happened is twofold. One is he said he is, and he's got great professional interest in doing that because this guy who he hitched his star to, Donald Trump, is the president of the United States, and that's good for Michael Cohen's own wallet to say that he's the man. And then secondarily, I think the media has done a lot of reporting without being as thorough as maybe it needs to be in terms of the roots of Donald Trump's business dealings. And I think that we're becoming more familiar with those, but it's easier to take Michael Cohen at face value than to dig into what did he know and what didn't he know. And a lot of the stuff he did was overseas deals that I think those could present a lot less dramatic of a legal threat to the president than some of the things that happened domestically that Michael Cohen never touched. Paul Manafort's a similar example. We know that Paul Manafort, you know, he's now been indicted. There's tax fraud. There's bank fraud. He was the president's campaign manager. Undoubtedly, he knows about some things that are going to be perilous to the president. But of everything Paul Manafort touched, how much of that ultimately is going to accrue to Trump himself and present a legal problem to the president? I think that's debatable.
I think that comparison is exactly right, Tim. And that's really interesting because like Manafort, Cohen has this
sort of history of these shady, sketchy dealings of his own. And what we don't know is whether they how they implicate Trump, whether they implicate Trump. But they include, and I don't know how much you've looked into this stuff, but, you know, this taxi cab medallion company where he's was partners with this Russian guy, Simon Garber, who got in legal trouble in the taxi business in Chicago and just looks like one of these. Well, he's not from Brighton Beach exactly, but, you know, one of these characters where there's a lot of stuff buried there. He's, you know, was had an ownership stake in this nightclub in Russian in Brighton Beach. He was childhood friends with Felix Sater.
Well, you know, I've looked a lot into Felix Sater, obviously, and Felix Sater was produced as a witness in my litigation with Trump, and that was the first time Sater was deposed publicly. And it was in the course of my case that Felix's background came out. So, and I've done my own reporting on him. But I do think Michael Cohen's intersections with Felix Sater are very dangerous for President Trump. The taxi medallion business, that was a side business that Cohen ran independent of the Trump Organization. It was something he brought with him when he went there. And everything attendant to that business could have nothing to do with Trump.
Right. And as far as we know, Trump was not in the business, except insofar as all links to Russia and Russians seem relevant. And it may be that 99 of them don't pan out, but one does. And until we know whether any do and which one of the 100 it might be, they all seem pretty intriguing.
They are intriguing, but there's a difference between intrigue and proof.
Yep.
There's a difference between intrigue and the end of Donald Trump's days. And there's a difference between intrigue and the end of Donald Trump's presidency. And so I think we got to be cautious around those things. Obviously, in Manafort's case, to keep this example going, you know, Cohen had his taxi medallion business with suspect ties. Manafort had done a lot of work for Oleg Deripaska in Eastern Europe. Deripaska is close to Putin. Manafort's firm represented Deripaska. By all accounts, it looks as if Manafort was helping Putin get a friendly government elected in Ukraine, possibly through Deripaska as a channel. That's what's been posited in some of the stories around this. All of that could have happened completely apart from Donald Trump. Maybe it didn't, but there's going to be a lot of legwork that prosecutors are going to have to go through to prove that that sort of event also compromised Trump. And remember, when Manafort got indicted, there was the same rush of coverage around Manafort as there was this last week around Cohen. You know, months have passed, and it just may be quite a bit longer before we know what we need to know to start being definitive.
I mean, I thought your colleague Noah Feldman, also a frequent guest on the show, made a great point in his column today about why he thinks the Cohen prosecution is potentially much more threatening to Donald Trump than Robert Mueller. Mueller has a limited mandate to investigate potential Russia collusion and things coming out of that. The Southern District of New York, the career prosecutors there, first of all, they can't be fired. Trump can't say, stop this prosecution, at least without creating a clearly impeachable offense of obstruction. And they have a sort of unlimited mandate to investigate crimes that may have been committed by Michael Cohen that Donald Trump might have been a co-conspirator in. And while they can't indict Trump on criminal charges while he's in office, they can, if they bring charges against Cohen, they can name Trump as an unindicted co-conspirator. And the day Trump leaves office, they could bring the prosecution. He thinks that's why this investigation is much more threatening. Do you agree?
I would interpret Noah's column differently. I agree with what Noah wrote, but I would interpret
but not without
it differently.
How he summarized it. Okay, yes. What did he actually write?
Well, I think what Noah was saying. You know, the issue obviously we all know is that Trump might fire Robert Mueller, which I fully think he'll do. I think Trump will try to decimate the top ranks of the Justice Department, and then fire Bob Mueller, and then we will have a constitutional crisis. What Noah was saying is Trump doesn't have the executive authority to reach into the Southern District and disrupt that investigation of Michael Cohen.
Right.
That they are independent, and that independence gives them a long-term base of strength for investigating Trump and his personal attorney, till they see a need to stop. So I think the difference between Mueller and the Southern District is whether or not they're beyond the reach of the president. I actually think Bob Mueller has just as broad a mandate, and I think he believes that himself. He's already subpoenaed the Trump Organization for business records. And that's actually why I think the people in the column I wrote about yesterday, Jason Greenblatt and Alan Weisselberg, could potentially be bigger fish because Bob Mueller can get to those guys, and they know much more. And Mueller's mandate was intentionally broad. He had to look at everything attended to possible collusion in the 2016 election. And of course, that's going to include financial quid pro quos. Now, Trump's critics of that investigation say it's a witch hunt because Mueller has exceeded his mandate. I don't believe he has. I think he's trying to track down whether or not Donald Trump was a compromised individual, either through collusion, obstruction of justice, or financial quid pro quos. I think what Noah was pointing out was Trump has ways to try to blow up the Mueller investigation. He's not going to be able to blow up this investigation in the Southern District. And there's a third piece of this, actually, that wasn't in Noah's column and I think is relevant, is that there's a third investigation, which is the New York State Attorney General's office and Eric Schneiderman. He's prosecuting Paul Manafort on his own. And he previously looked at the Trump Organization's charitable foundations. That investigation is also outside of Trump's reach.
And even more so because it's pardon proof, right?
I mean,
he can pardon Manafort on federal charges, but he can't pardon him on state charges. So even if he were to make some sort of corrupt deal with Manafort or decide to pardon him, he doesn't get him off the hook with Schneiderman.
Correct. And the other, you know, I think interesting human element of all this in that is that, you know, Bob Mueller has been playing three-dimensional chess while the Trump team has been playing bingo. I think when Mueller came in, from the minute, remember, he comes in because Jim Comey's been fired. So Mueller knows from the day of his appointment there's a potential that Trump will try to fire him too. So what does he do to insulate his investigation from executive branch overreach and people running into the Justice Department at night and shutting him down and taking his records? He essentially does a joint prosecution with Eric Schneiderman against Manafort, which allows him to share all of his records with Schneiderman.
Huh.
So there's record preservation going on in this relationship with Schneiderman. It's not just that Schneiderman is independent of the president. It's that Bob Mueller has someone he can share with.
The strategy is amazing. It's like you have to create privilege for the documents by getting them on the public record in an untouchable way.
Right, and that's one of the arguments for why he handed off this aspect of the Trump investigation involving Cohn to the Southern District. It's yet another way to shore up his own defenses in case the president chooses to try to fire him.
I saw someone very cleverly, I can't remember who it was, call it a blockchain prosecution. This technology that distributes the secrets so that nobody can hack it and destroy it.
Everything comes back to blockchain and Bitcoin now.
This is the closest I've come to understanding blockchain is through that metaphor. So you mentioned these two other people in the Trump Organization, two other lawyers, Greenblatt and Weisselberg.
Yeah, well, Alan Weisselberg's actually the chief financial officer of the Trump Organization. It's useful at this point to remember that the Trump Organization is not a Fortune 500 company. It's a mom-and-pop shop. Essentially, it's very small. And it's largely a branding and licensing arm of Donald Trump himself. And Alan Weisselberg was Trump's father's accountant, Fred Trump's accountant, going back to when Fred Trump was operating out of Avenue Z in Coney Island, Brooklyn, and young Donald was in a little office in the back being miserable and dreaming about building things in Manhattan. Alan Weisselberg went with Trump to the Trump Organization. He knows where all the finances are and the financial structure of most of the deals, and has a very hands-on knowledge of Donald Trump's personal finances and business finances. The other individual I mentioned in the story, Jason Greenblatt, joined the Trump Organization in 1997, a decade before Michael Cohn joined.
Yeah.
He had been a lawyer at Fried Frank, an expert was a well-regarded real estate lawyer. Trump brings him into the organization, and he's essentially he's an executive vice president there, and he is essentially the firm's in-house counsel. He's the guy who everyone thinks Michael Cohn is, and no deals got done at the Trump Organization without Jason Greenblatt signing off on them. I'm not saying that either Greenblatt or Weisselberg have done anything wrong. I just think it's logical, as Bob Mueller continues to investigate the Trump Organization's business dealings and has issued subpoenas in pursuit of trying to decide what those are about, that he's going to have questions of both of those guys. And they just have a much deeper wealth of knowledge than Michael Cohen.
And they know more, and they don't go around bragging about their undying loyalty. I mean, I guess Weisselberg, you know, if he's been with the family that long, I don't know, what's your assessment? Is he a guy you could imagine flipping on Trump?
No, I don't, actually. And, you know, when Trump and his attorney set up a trust for his own business holdings after he became president, Alan Weisselberg is one of the trustees of that trust. He manages it. Trump appointed him to do that for himself along with his two eldest sons. I think you'd have to go very far before Alan Weisselberg flipped on Trump. Jason Greenblatt is now an envoy to Israel on behalf of the White House. Trump appointed him at the end of 2016, so he plays a senior diplomatic role for Trump in the Middle East. Having said that, the reality is I think everyone who's around Donald Trump, at both the Trump Organization and the White House, knows at the end of the day, the only back Donald Trump will really cover is his own. He may go out of his way for his children, but it primarily ends there. And these kinds of federal prosecutions become meat grinders. Bob Mueller is a formidable, formidable investigator, and he's going to churn people from the bottom all the way up to the top to get where he wants to go. And if it comes down to people like Michael Cohen and others deciding to flip or cooperate, I imagine many of them, the calculation they'll make is they should flip, that Trump either won't pardon them or won't be loyal to them. And I think it was kind of telling last week after the FBI executed the search warrant on Michael Cohen's residences and office, the president in a cabinet meeting in the White House said, this is incredible. They've broken into the offices of my, essentially, he said, you know, they've broken into the offices of my personal attorney and knocked the doors off their hinges. It was very colorful language of that sort. People went to Michael Cohen, and he said, actually, they were very polite, and they came in, and they were very professional about what they did. And I sort of thought to myself, aha, a little bit of daylight just opened up.
Interesting.
Trump,
that is a close reading
attorney.
Of it. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He doesn't want to make his relationship with those people any worse. Donald Trump does have a penchant for a Jewish lawyer and a Jewish accountant. It seems like he won't hire you in either of those jobs if you don't have a Jewish last name.
Well, you know, Jacob, a good friend of mine, a Jewish reporter at the New York Times, said this is bad for the Jews, or, oh my God, another Jewish attorney. And I reminded him that Anthony Scaramucci is Italian and that Don McGahn is Irish, and the president essentially runs a sort of UN of sometimes sketchy advisors and lawyers.
I've been speaking to Tim O'Brien of Bloomberg View and Bloomberg Gadfly. Tim, thanks for joining me today.
Great to be with you, Jacob.
That's it for today's show. TrumpCast was produced by Jason DeLeon, Asher Perlman, and Steve Waltein of The Opposition with Jordan Klepper improvised today's sketch. I'm Jacob Weisberg. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.